Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia was recently downgraded in the US Department of State's 2021 Trafficking in Persons report, falling to Tier 3 after spending 3 years on the Tier 2 watch list. Now, the State Department ranks countries in Tier 3 for failing to comply with the minimum standards for eliminating trafficking or making significant efforts to comply. Now, we join North Korea, South Sudan and Myanmar among the countries on the Tier 3 watch list. So to discuss this report further, and its repercussions of being on the Tier 3 ranking, we have His Excellency Brian McFeeters, the US Ambassador to Malaysia, joining us on the show. Thank you so much for being with us today, Your Excellency. Now, can you very quickly begin by explaining what were the reasons that caused Malaysia to be added to the Tier 3 list, the worst offenders in the Trafficking in Persons report? I'm just wondering, because we spent three years on the Tier 2 ranking, what was the tipping point that caused us to be downgraded into Tier 3?
Thank you very much. You know, the topic is so important. I want to make clear that, you know, we're talking about Malaysia, but trafficking in persons is a global phenomenon. Every U.S. embassy looks at it. President Biden and Secretary Blinken consider it a priority. The United States struggles with it. So, you know, we're not here to particularly point the finger at Malaysia. In Malaysia's case, there's a lot of good things that are going on. There's a lot of good plans, and I'd be glad to say more about that. I think the focus that the evaluators are looking for, you know, those who do the studies to come up with these reports, they're basically looking at more implementation of the three, what we call the three Ps. You know, how do you prevent trafficking? How do you protect the victims, and how do you prosecute, in many cases, the organized crime organizations that are behind the crime? So it's more of what Malaysia is already doing.
Your Excellency, you know, we understand with the new administration that there is an emphasis on human rights again after a kind of four-year lull. I do want to ask you, though, in terms of the history of this particular report and its impact on bilateral relations, there were concerns in the past that, you know, especially during the time of the TPP negotiations, that Malaysia actually was looked upon rather favorably by the administration, the Obama administration, therefore didn't suffer the worst kinds of downgrade, even in after the Wang Kalian death camps issue came up. So I'm wondering about the feeling that they are among critics that reports like these are deeply political, and they represent not just the facts on the ground, but also thinking about Malaysia's strategic value to the U.S.
I take your question as a valid one. I think the strength of the Trafficking in Persons report is that it's based on objective standards and, in many cases, objective data. You know, the Malaysia report itself is, you know, it's roughly 10 or 15 pages long, right? It's not a long read, so I would welcome people to look at it. But it does two things that I think are very valuable. One is it has an action-oriented list of recommendations, you know, things like identifying victims better and providing more resources to the efforts to go after criminals. And, you know, the report on the United States has that as well. So it's a pretty kind of cut and dried report in terms of the recommendations are needs to be done. And also in terms of the data, you know, it goes through and says how many prosecutions were there. So it compares Malaysia compared to what Malaysia did in previous years, and it sets out a roadmap. And I think we have the ability in partnership with the government of Malaysia to make a lot of improvements. It's clearly up to the government of Malaysia and the civil society and the individuals in Malaysia, but we have some things to offer, some partnership efforts.
Can you help us understand what this Tier 3 ranking or this Tier 3, third tier status, what repercussions now that Malaysia's been downgraded to this worst tier? I mean, what does the US State Department use this report for in terms of its, you know, in terms of the ranking of the Trafficking Persons report?
The main result for us at the Embassy of Malaysia being on Tier 3 is to renew our efforts with the government of Malaysia, with civil society, to go after the problem. I think it's, you know, it's helpful. It's not maybe pleasant, but it's helpful in the sense that it calls attention to this scourge, which is, you know, these are crimes against vulnerable people to begin with, but then they become, you know, more mistreated because they get in situations of forced labor or, you know, terrible living conditions. Their passports are confiscated. I mean, the fact that Malaysia is on tier three enables us to focus better on that. And I'm seeing on the part of the government of Malaysia, equal increased focus. I think the Ministry of Home Affairs is very focused on the national action plan that Malaysia came up with this year. I understand it's the first time they came up with a plan in cooperation with the civil society organizations. We consider that best practice. One of the successes that the United States has had, and we're not perfect in this, is we've developed ability to have a network between law enforcement, civil society, and prosecutors to go after the, again, it's organized crime that sponsors trafficking in person. So my answer would be, it's mainly to focus on the issue more. Now, there are some possible effects on some assistance programs to Malaysia, but that has not been decided, and that will not be a major factor.
What else, you know, in terms of the details that you give in the report, you know, do you think would be of value? In particular, I'm thinking about your analysis of government thinking. The report seems to suggest that the government kind of misunderstands the problem. You know, there's a conflation and there's a sort of sidestepping of the phenomena itself. And so that leads Malaysian government to take the wrong action or to miss the targets. Could you talk a little more about that aspect of the report?
Certainly. You know, I personally, and many of my colleagues, I think, agree that it would be better to call this human slavery. That's what it is in essence. And, you know, the Malaysian Constitution, just like the U.S. Constitution, forbids human slavery. So we're in agreement on that. I think we observe a problem in Malaysia that, and it happens in other countries too, that maybe people conflate human trafficking with migrant issues, you know, with illegal immigration. Sometimes the two are happening at the same time, and the U.S. has complicated cases. But what we've learned to do in the United States, not perfectly, is to take somebody who perhaps they're in a situation of illegal immigration, but on top of that, they became trafficked. Maybe they're forced to work in a restaurant for no pay, or maybe they go into a, you know, sexual slavery. We take it and we say, let's focus on them as a trafficking victim rather than simply treating them as a, you know, a violator of the immigration laws.
Right. And this complexity of modern day slavery practices, I mean, you know, if I may quote the report, I think the first line of the report had that the sentence that Malaysia continued to conflate human trafficking and migrant smuggling crimes. And if I may follow up on Sharad's question, I'm just wondering whether the US State Department feels that the Malaysian government has a good grasp of the complexities of modern day slavery. Do officials truly understand and acknowledge the existence of this complex problem?
I think the Malaysian government's understanding of the problem is just on par with the United States. You know, maybe nobody understands it perfectly. We don't feel that there's a lack of conceptual understanding. I think what we're focused on, and again, what we're trying to partner on, is taking that understanding and implementing. You know, let me just give you one example. The one of the major kind of tragedies of human trafficking is somebody who's vulnerable to begin with, low income, desperate situation, wants to come to Malaysia to work. And in order to get to Malaysia to work, they first have to become indebted thousands of dollars. Maybe they had to mortgage their house or their farm. So they're starting out on a very vulnerable basis. And we understand that many of them come to Malaysia with this debt hanging over their heads. The employer effectively prevents them from ever getting out of debt. You know, that I think that's, you know, something that any human being has to, you know, just kind of cry foul about. I think it's, you know, one of the main values, I think, is getting this out, you know, kind of getting a sense of outrage out to the public. Again, a struggle in America as well. Many people are not aware of the scope of the problem.
Your Excellency, is there a serious problem of political will? And I come back to the death camps of Wang Kalian. We saw very different action taken on the Thai side of the border, with hundreds of people, prosecuted, high officials, and very few on the Malaysian side. And that continues to be true of the Wang Kalian death camps. Is this about political will?
You know, I began my service as ambassador here in February, so I'm aware of what you're talking about, but not completely read up in that. So I would say our focus is going forward. You know, we have this situation, we have broad understanding of it. We have a partnership with the government of Malaysia. Officers on my team have recently met with law enforcement personnel, virtually in the days of COVID, but they've met to talk about the nitty-gritty of how do you go after the problem. Just this morning, I was very proud to launch, along with the Deputy Secretary for Home Affairs, a program that is going to organize, government efforts in line with civil society efforts to go after trafficking in Malaysia, human slavery in Malaysia on a whole of nation basis. So, I think, rather than go into the detail of your question, I would just say, what are we trying to do?
Right. Can I ask you, coming back to something you said a little bit earlier, Ambassador, about making sure that the issues are out there, that there's awareness about the problem within society. And I'm just wondering what your observations have been in terms of the reaction to the Tier 3 downgrade or the lack of reaction, given that Malaysia is dealing with multiple crises at the moment, not just the pandemic, but economic, and now we have a political crisis as well. So, have you noticed the report or this downgrade taking a back seat in terms of being at the forefront of government priorities?
We see the government having a very strong and positive reaction. The embassy has an ongoing dialogue with various levels of the government of Malaysia, probably principally with MAPO, the interagency organization that's responsible for trafficking. That's ongoing. In connection with the recent release of the TRIP report, my team and I met with the Minister of Home Affairs, Minister of Human Resources. Both of them, had teams with them. It's one of these meetings where you talk briefly about the problem, then you talk mostly about what are we going to do about it. So I do have a sense of seriousness on the, I see a sense of seriousness on the part of the government of Malaysia. We also see the fact that the government of Malaysia, the human resources minister in particular, mentioned to me that he's in closer contact with civil society organizations than he has been. So that's, I think the seriousness is there. Let me just make one more point, and that is the report acknowledges that COVID has made things difficult across the world. But Secretary Blinken, in his introduction to the report, said that's true, but it's also true that COVID has made the vulnerable more vulnerable, particularly people being tricked online into situations of slavery, particularly sexual slavery. So COVID has made governance tough. I'm part of the government and I recognize that, but COVID has also made the trafficking in persons, human slavery issue even more urgent.
Your Excellency, is there any cooperation between the US embassies in the region and ASEAN? Is ASEAN a partner in this, considering that Malaysia is a net importer of labor, whereas many of our neighbors are net exporters, and many of the people who are trafficked here are in fact our neighbors?
ASEAN has an anti-trafficking plan. I have to say that I've mainly been focused on the Malaysia level. I think even if I can maybe take a different tack with your question, I think it's important that there be partnerships beyond ASEAN. For example, just to name one country, Bangladesh, right? Bangladesh and Nepal and other countries, not to single out Bangladesh, but that there are many source countries inside ASEAN and also outside ASEAN. I'm somewhat close to the Indonesian ambassador, and he has told me some very harrowing stories about domestic workers coming from Malaysia being locked up, the least bad thing that happens to these young women, they tend to be young women, is that their passport gets locked up. But the worst thing is, they get locked up never having a day off, or they get abused or even physically abused, burned. I mean, it's the whole range of terrible crimes. So I think it is important that there be more cooperation between countries of ASEAN and also between Malaysia and countries beyond ASEAN.
That was His Excellency Brian McPheeters, the US Ambassador to Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this, but after we come back, we'll speak to SOCOM Commissioner Gerald Joseph about Malaysia's response to the latest downgrade. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing Malaysia's recent downgrade to the worst ranking in the United States Trafficking in Persons Report. This for failing to meet the minimum standards for the elimination of trafficking in persons and not making significant efforts to ensure compliance. Gerald Joseph is one of the commissioners of the National Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, better known as SOHCM. He joins us now. Gerald, the Trafficking in Persons Report, and I thought was interesting. One of the things that I thought was particularly interesting was that it said, and if I may quote the report, it said the Malaysian government continued to conflate human trafficking and migrant smuggling issues and did not adequately address the allegations of human trafficking, end quote. I'm wondering what you make of this. You know, what was your analysis of this conflating human trafficking and migrant smuggling crimes?
Hi, Melissa and Sharad. Yes, I think... The Trafficking in Persons report by the US, the downgrade, well, something that is not a moment where we will be happy about. We always want an upgrade, but downgrades are only a moment for us to push up ourselves. And this has been long time coming because the warning signs over the last years on lack of protection for human trafficking victims. And I think you already pointed out, Melissa, that the economic migrants who are brought in via an exploitative function, and many of them also fall into the category of forced labor or contemporary forms of forced labor, and the inability to understand trafficking and economic migrant, and if they fall into forced labor, and everybody is seen as, the word they like to use is illegal or undocumented, and so you have to bear the full brunt of the law, being arrested or detained, and you know, depot immigration, prisons, and then get deportation. So I think if that's the broadest framework in trying to protect Malaysia, then it does very little at the root causes on how we stop trafficking, and also more sadly, how we differentiate the many trafficking victims who are victims who need a different application on how we treat the victims as opposed to perpetrators. So I think the report is right to capture that issue.
Gerald, do you mean that right now there's no distinction as to how the government treats victims of trafficking versus perpetrators of trafficking?
They have. The law, ATIPSOM law, actually speaks specifically about victims that needs to be protected. So there are protection houses for traffic victims. But in the initial, if I may use a terrible word, the scoop in an operation, everybody is deemed having violated a criminal law in terms of immigration offences. So I say, at the first instance, why not look at everyone as criminals first? Everyone as a worker and could be victims of exploitation. And then your system of check and balance should come into play. So an operation should come in with competent, relevant agencies, NGOs, the UN, as your partner, so that you can immediately separate those who are actually victims of the trafficking or forced labor and those who actually knowingly overstate economic migrants, who then should be bear the brunt of the law and be deported. And then, of course, those who are asylum seekers, refugees, then will also be protected. So I think there is, but what happens is that there is so little differentiation, but by the time the law comes into force, some of them may be waiting or languishing in immigration depots or prisons before they are called out and taken up. And also the notion that everyone is illegal because of an immigration offense, I think is a wrong way to move forward on this.
Gerald, what do you make, as somebody who's, you know, studied human rights, of this particular report? I mean, is it kind of tailored to the needs of the American government, or is it a kind of gold standard for kind of international monitoring of countries and their commitment to end human trafficking?
Well, it is an American report. And I think any country can decide to do a report on the world, on themselves. So there will be some nuances of what they think is trafficking or forced labor. And I say this also because we have got complaints in Sohakam about forced labor in the plantations. And this has come to our interests in Malaysia because of the big plantation segments like FGV, Sime W, and all those allegations that needs to be investigated. But then when we go to take this case and go to Sabah and realize that there is a whole generation, two, three generation without document, having living there in families. And so you are stuck. The non-documentation of these workers is not the fault of the companies, but it is a policy at the state and federal level that is not really realized. And so the victims are the individuals, and they have families, and they need to live, they need to work. So what do you do? Do you allow them to work, or do you say, sorry, no work for you, we wait? So I think the nuances, I think, are missing, but I think the nuances shouldn't be an excuse for exploitation. And that's why I say the report is an American report, and that's fine. I think Malaysia, any country, should be able to stand up to the test of a UN report, a regional report, a national report, no problem. But if we are doing well, so what? It can be the US, it can be anyone who wants to make a report of us, but we should be able to defend ourselves. So I take it from that point of view that this documentation and standard setting exercise is a good internal Malaysian exercise. It's not about pleasing the US, it's for us. We want to make sure no trafficked victim is not protected in Malaysia.
If I may, focus on not just the victims, but now focus on the perpetrators. And what was curious about this report is it also cited that governments, it says governments in the tier three list were found to have a policy or a pattern of state-sponsored human trafficking in government-funded programs. And what was stinging about this report, it also, to quote them, it had official complicity continues to undermine anti-trafficking efforts. I'm wondering whether that has been recognized and addressed.
I think this is a secret that is not such a secret, no? The corrupt nature of so many practices in Malaysia that enables trafficking to move in and out. And I say this only because we have the dark chapter in Malaysia of the Wang Kalian death camps a few years ago. We saw 135 bodies being exhumed, found in the jungles of our borders. And I think if trafficking victims can be found in this nature, then you ask the question, how is it possible? How is the system enabling people to move in? And this is a security zones. It's not the normal Kuala Lumpur and Selangor walking through. This is security, high security places. Then you ask the question, who's involved, who's complicit? And that's why I take my hats off to Thailand for having jailed a five-star general and all the top officials quite quickly after Wang Kalian. And we, Sohakam, completed our investigation, submitted our report. And the call is for where are the perpetrators of Malaysia who facilitated, who oiled the movement of people through the money. And sadly, the Royal Commission inquiry was formed after our release of the report. But yet today, we don't see that report being made public. And I think it's long overdue if we want to stop.
So Gerald, a lack of political will, perhaps, nods and, gestures that they will try to improve, when such a report comes out by the US. Of course, it's a major trading partner. It's huge. It's got diplomatic heft. They'll have to say they'll try better. But will they? I mean, what real incentives are there for the government to change year after year with these miserable assessments of our fight against human trafficking?
I think Malaysian as a whole, the public has learned that during this COVID-19, sadly, we needed a terrible pandemic to teach us of bad practices like the overcrowding of migrant worker and the many clusters, then we realize, oops, how come these people were like this and then the clusters? But they've been suffering like this. So in the report, it speaks about forced labor, bad conditions of work. The second point is the smuggling of people across borders through our Jalan Tikus has been happening for so long. It's a kind of an open secret, all kinds of operasi, but
it's still a highway, isn't it? It's not a Jalan Tikus, yeah. It's a highway of Tikus.
Okay. Sorry, well, Sharad, you may have already visited the length, but okay, it's a highway of Jalan Tikus. and the very fact that we needed a special ops Benteng to protect ourselves during COVID only proves the point that there were too many, as you say, highways that enable people to walk in. This means the interlinkages with middlemen, women, and this middlemen, women must include for sure government agencies, as was pointed out by the MACC arrests of some immigration officials in the last 12 months. Kudos to them, but I think more needs to be done if we are going to clean up the system. So I think it's not one player who's going to clean it up. And you're right, Sharad, it cannot just be mere talk. But I also say this because the Human Resource Ministry is realizing forced labor is becoming such a serious matter. I think they just launched an online feedback to develop a 5-year national action plan on forced labor. And I think I'm asking the public, please go and give your take on it and how Malaysia can improve ourselves.
Right, thank you so much. That was Sohagam Commissioner Gerald Joseph. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you, don't forget that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines from AstraAwani.com as well as the Astra Awani app. I'm Alyssa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.